Okay, today is December 7th.
Right.
70th anniversary of the bombing of Pearl
That's
Harbor.
That's right, yeah.
This is the third and probably final interview with Bev Phillips. We're here, as we have been, in the conference room in the University Archives, which is inside of Steenbach Memorial Library. My name is Troy Reeves with the UW Madison Oral History Program. All right, Bev, if you don't mind, just to make sure I have the sound quality here, could you say your name and then spell your last name?
Sure. Beverly Phillips, Phillips.
Looks like that's going to be just fine. All right. So my first question today is, I want to talk some more about your time as the, I think the official title was coordinator for the Land Tenure
right.
Center, although you were always, you were unofficially coordinator, you were always sort of officially a special librarian,
right, my title was special librarian, that's right.
Okay, because we sort of left off in the transition into that. And I'm interested in if you have more to say about your time as coordinator, particularly as it pertains to making the collection available electronically, particularly either more about the website that you talked about or more about just making sure that people from all over can get at that material.
Right. Well, over the years, there was always, thought about actual digitizing of the library materials, but that wasn't really practical because of copyright concerns. So people would often broach the subject, and then when they realized that the library was collecting so much more than just Land Tenure Center's publications, they sort of backpedal from that. So at least in those days, with Google Books, who knows where it'll go, but in that time I really concentrated on making sure the records were accessible and information about the collection and about interlibrary loan and all that sort of thing, and then making Land Tenure Center's own publications available electronically.
Okay, so somewhat akin to what we try to do at the archives even today is not necessarily make the collection available digitally, although we've done that, but put out those finding aids and those indexes in a way that lets people know what you have, so when they come in they have a better understanding.
Exactly.
Okay.
So there were different aspects to that. One was just the fact of getting all of the catalog records digitized, and then they were part of the online catalog of UW-Madison. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of done in advance of the merger of collections. Then on the website, in the old days, before electronic catalogs, what we had done was published basically print bibliographies. And we had several of those that LTC published that were geographically focused. So in the early days, that was a big thing, keeping track of sort of extra copies of all the records so that we could generate print bibliography. And those were published something called Training and Methods series and included call numbers. And we always felt it was important to, if you had a bibliography, especially for people around the world, to only include things that you knew were actually existed somewhere, not just say, this exists, good luck in finding it, as many bibliographies did, but for this subject matter, to make sure that we included location information and that sort of thing. Once the catalog was online, then part of it was just making sure that it was clear to people that the online catalog was and is an index to the collection. And by being very consistent in cataloging practice, there were good ways to search the online catalog and come up with a bibliography by country. And I actually often did that for people by email in those later years. They would say, we're interested in whatever, and I could run a search and basically generate a bibliography that I would then email them, especially if they were in a place that didn't have good internet access. Also made it clear how Interloan worked, and our materials being part of the UW collection were available by interlibrary loan like anything else. The other part of the sort of current awareness was generating new book lists, or not just new book lists, but accessions lists, which were on our website, and many people also received those by email, so we had an email distribution list. So that did include information about journal articles as well, which were no longer being added to the card catalog or the online catalog, either one. So I was also maintaining a database in ProCite, which is a software system that's kind of a precursor to EndNote. It was a bibliographic software system. So I basically got the information into ProCite and then used that to generate the bibliographies I think they were usually quarterly, I believe. And in addition, I could use that to supplement the online catalog for things added to the collection since the Landineer Center Library had ceased to exist as a standalone entity. For LTC publications, again, I was working at getting them available digitally for the new ones and getting the digital ones available in, I think I mentioned it's part of AGNIC, it's called Aggie Concert, Minnesota. So our earliest publications, the publications that were the earliest ones to be issued digitally were on deposit there. Again, so it wouldn't be dependent on what happened locally at Madison to make them available.
Okay. So while all this is going on, you know, you're doing library, as I mentioned last time, you're doing library work really a library.
Right.
What sort of, or is there interaction you're having with the librarians who have the collection? Specifically, it sounded like from last time, most of the collection stayed here at Steenbach.
Most of it stayed at Steenbach, and actually I always had a really good relationship with the staff at Steenbach, but during those days, primarily, I worked with the people in technical services. To some extent, tech services at Memorial Library or for the GLS generally, but mostly with Steenbach. And since I already had a good working relationship with them, you know, we sort of, when new things came in that I had ordered, they would send them through the delivery service to my office, and I would physically examine them, and if they needed sort of beefing up in the subject cataloging, I could do that. If questions came up either way, we consulted back and forth. So I had a computer hooked into the library system that was furnished by the general library system, the same as I always had. Mm-hmm. So really the only thing that I wasn't doing was obviously the day-to-day answering questions of people who just walked through the door. But as far as getting things into the collection, that's still, I saw everything. And, mm-hmm. and many things came to me first as donations or whatever, or because we had ordered them saying, could we have this for free, please? And in those cases, I would do the work and then send it to Steenbach for just the physical processing. Okay. Worked out pretty well.
So as electronic communication progressed from the mid-90s to the early 2000s, right. Were there times where people would come here to find out about LTC stuff, and then librarians here would email you to help them?
Sure, that happens sometimes. Definitely that happened. I always, because of the relationship I had with faculty, there were also often cases, even after I left Land Tenure Center, where faculty members would just send people directly to me, either in person or you know, email. Mm-hmm. So yes, I definitely you know, helped answer questions either way. And then we always did have a lot of questions from either people off campus, and I certainly dealt with those, and from people who were more in the sort of visiting scholar, short-term student category.
Okay. It just seems so almost ubiquitous now in 2011
right.
that if somebody walked in here
right.
Looking for something in our archives, they would walk them up. But
right.
if somebody
right.
came to Memorial
right.
looking for the archives, they'd either send us an email or
right.
an IM
yeah.
or they'd
right.
call.
Right. I mean, we didn't do IM, but beyond that, we did, you know, email and telephone and you know, that sort of thing.
So this leads to a question about we were talking about your sort of working relationship with GLS.
Uh-huh.
Did you, as a special librarian not in GLS, did you still try to become involved in GLS or library activities?
That was more difficult when I was at LTC only and not, you know, physically in the libraries. Not so much because of any unwillingness on the part of GLS, but just because of time and the lack of sort of, you know, off-the-cuff day-to-day contacts with other librarians. So I think in those days I was on, you know, I was on a few email distribution lists, probably the cataloging, and I kind of kept in touch with the area studies bibliographers, and I might have been on a general email list, but I had to really watch how many I was on, as we all do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we, you know, I kept in contact, but I would say it was the contact with the other special libraries that suffered, as not only ours, but other special libraries found their staffs reduced, and then there was less opportunity for, you know, face-to-face collaboration and different activities.
Okay. What about campus in general? Were you involved in any sort of committees or groups or anything on a campus basis?
No. The one thing I haven't mentioned, but while I was, during those years, last years that I was in the offices at LTC, I mentioned that, you know, originally someone else created the website and I was responsible for a couple of portions of it. Eventually, again, just as sort of staffing and funding and things changed, but by the end of that period, I was managing their website completely. And also, I had sort of taken over responsibility for IT. Now, I don't have IT training, so in practice, what that meant was that we had a contract with someone for do it for the more complex things, and I was responsible for the day-to-day, you know, installing computers, getting them running, and supervising a student employee who had more kind of computer background.
Mm.
So between that and the library stuff, there was just really not that much time for involvement in other campus things.
So you had responsibilities akin to the library technology group.
Right.
Specifically for your Land Tenure Center.
But for the Land Tenure Center, that's right.
Okay.
So, you know, make sure the world didn't explode at Y2K and all that
right.
kind of stuff.
Right. That's an interesting question, actually. I hadn't thought about that. How, I guess I'll just ask it this way, how concerned were you you know, as a librarian and also a librarian with IT responsibilities about Y2K?
Well, not excessively concerned. I think as a librarian, one thing that we're aware of that computer people are too is just, you know, sort of planning for contingencies. And so the real thing was just being sure we worked with the people and do it to follow their advice on how to prepare. And then in the end, it was no biggie. So that was good. How much of that was because we prepared or, you know, it's always nice to have an opportunity to sort of make sure all your systems are compatible and up to date and all that anyway. So it was, I said, oh, good, that morning.
Right.
Nothing bad happened.
So the other event that happened during your time as a coordinator was 9/11.
Right. Yeah.
And since we're thinking about a 70th anniversary of Pearl Harbor today, wondering if you wouldn't mind talking about your memories of 9/11.
Well, there are two parts to that. One was my the actual day of. Like a lot of people, I was actually listening to public radio before I came to work, and I don't know, it was Tom Clark was on the radio talking to somebody in New York who actually saw the first plane, and he says, I'm sorry, but, you know, something bad just happened, and they weren't sure if it was, you know, an accident or what was going on. But then shortly after I came to work that morning, the second plane hit, and actually what we did, we from Land Tenure Center, we all went across this, well, down the block to a bar that had TVs, and we watched it there together during that day. So that was day of. And the aspect that I remember most connected to LTC, though, is that we had a lot of, you know, well, not a lot, but we always had some Muslim students and people working with us, including at that time my the student who was doing the IT stuff was a young woman from Malaysia. And she, you know, when it first happened, I was very concerned that there might be bad feelings towards her. And she, her initial thought was that this was something global, and what if they also go after the Petrobras towers in Malaysia? So that was kind of interesting, but I was really concerned about whether she might get any problems from people. And in the end, it was okay, but she did tell me that, you know, people, she'd hear people talking about her on the bus and saying nasty things, and she was, you know, she was just so, you know, she's just small and like inoffensive with a scarf, and, you know, nobody would ever, and sweet and nice and smart and all that kind of thing. But she said, I just wanted to go over and punch them. What are they talking about? But the other thing that was, I really appreciated was our director at the time at LTC was Harvey Jacobs, who's an urban and regional planning professor. And he made a point of offering to her, if she was concerned on that day, to like go home with her, take her home, make sure she was okay, and that she didn't encounter any kind of backlash. So that was like, very appreciated too.
Thank you. Okay.
It did make me, I think, also more sort of aware of having her work there, as well as these events, more aware of what was going on with the Muslim community, although I'd known Muslims for years. I remember when she left, it was during Ramadan, so we had a going away where I put everything into like a, you know, little individual packet so we could have the going away party but not eat in front of her, and then everybody took them either back to their office or took them home to eat after sun went down. So that was actually very nice, and she appreciated it a lot, I think.
Yeah, that sounds like that was very thoughtful.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say about 9/11 or
no.
or Y2K?
No.
These sort of global things that happened on while you were there?
Only that, you know, the things about U.S. politics, you know, no reason to get into, but it was really unfortunate that one thing that meant was it made it that much harder for students from other countries to come to the United States to study. The rules got really it had never been easy, but they put in all these things. Oh, you have to have enough money to pay for your whole education before you can even set foot in the country, and it just became so difficult that a lot of people found other places to go. I was sorry about that.
I think I keep asking you this because I am jealous. So I would like to ask, according to your resume, you got to you had to take a couple of trips in this 96 to 2003, or at least a couple of consulting.
Yeah,
I didn't write down exactly. I think one was El Salvador, maybe, and the other was Chad?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Where are they on your resume? I can't.
Here and here.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Well, again, I think for people that are thinking about being a librarian, and for people like my family, it's like, oh my God, you travel a lot. And to me, it was, I didn't travel a lot. The people I worked with traveled a lot. I traveled occasionally. And these two particular consultancies, the El Salvador one was actually, I was given release time, and it was done through DAI, Development Alternatives Incorporated, a consulting firm in Maryland, I think. So that was a brief project where the idea was to take some materials in the library at the U.S. Embassy in El Salvador and do some organization and some digitizing. And, you know, the questions of digitizing were kind of iffy because it was mostly government of El Salvador things and the copyright law and all that, and I didn't want to, you know, so I was working with another person from DAI who lived there in D.C. He and I went down and worked with the people in the U.S. Embassy. In the end, the output of that was basically what I considered digital preservation of some of the materials. So they were never able to quite get a handle on the you know, the copyright issues, which I seem to be the only one raising, but, you know, still. But it seemed clear when I looked into U.S. law anyway that you could have a couple of copies of something for preservation purposes. So the output of that was a series of CDs on which we digitized what they thought were the most important materials in their collection dealing with some land reform issues in El Salvador. And then I created, just using HTML, a kind of a digital index that was also on the CD, so you could, you know, find the stuff on there that way. And I used ProCite to generate the indexes. And then we made three copies. We left one there. We gave one in special collections here on UW-Madison, and one that was given to the USAID library in D.C.
Okay. And the trip to Chad?
The trip to Chad was, you know, I don't remember that much about the work because it was the only time I ever had to actually try to function in French. I never studied French beyond reading. I went with Peter Block, and it was, again, part of a larger project. I think my going to Chad was more just preliminary understanding what their library circumstances were and meeting some people. And then their librarian came here and, again, gathered some, you know, did some purchasing, identified some things that, that he made copies of and some that sort of thing. So it was a shorter trip, but by the end, I took a walk all by myself and talked to a couple of strangers in French, so it's exciting.
All right, so I think we are now at the point of moving to Steenbach in 2003. Mm-hmm. So I'll ask, why did you move to Steenbach in 2003?
Oh, dear. Well, through the years with LTC, you know, as funding came and went, I was under layoff notice more than once. And so in the earlier times, I'd been under layoff notice, especially one of them that was pretty serious. I actually had a pretty good handle on what the rules were about laying people off. I mean, that is what rights you had for. You don't have a right to a transfer. You do have a, as an academic staff member, but you did have a right to priority consideration for jobs for which you're qualified. And some other things like that. But, you know, I sort of knew those things. I don't have real clear memories of all the details, but basically what happened was LTC's funding looked to be running out, and a bunch of us were placed on layoff notice. Well, not just a bunch of us, everybody. And then we basically filed a grievance that the decision was made that Lantinger Center was going to be closed before it was clear that there would or would not be funding. So it was a big whoop-de-doo. We all got a lawyer, well, those of us who joined in the grievance. You know, bottom line, the ruling was indeed that things had been done, you know, like improperly, and we won, and that made me feel really good. But the fact of the matter was that I was still looking for another job, and I was still on layoff notice because it still could happen. Layoff notice doesn't mean you will be laid off. It means just there's not guaranteed funding for you after this, you know, end of this contract. So under those circumstances, I was looking for what jobs around campus might show up for which I might be qualified. And when Steenbach, you know, and I wasn't looking for just anything. You know, there were some that came up that I decided I was not interested in. But when something came open at Steenbach, I was, and so they hired me. I did get the, you know, priority interview you first, see if you're qualified, and mm-hmm. I was, so I started working at Steenbach. It was it was good. The reason I was happy to apply for the job at Steenbach and not interested in some others is that I really wanted a part of my career where I was a part back in a library circumstance with a larger community of librarians to work with. I was very happy to have that opportunity.
Okay. So I think I'd like to ask first about the tasks. What were some of your primary or secondary tasks while here? I know you switched jobs, but it sounds like from your resume.
Well, it's more of an evolution than a switching. Yeah.
Right. So if you wouldn't mind just giving an overview, and I might do some follow-ups based
when
on that.
When I started at Steenbach, I was hired as a reference librarian, or shortly after that, they decided to call the department information services, but basically, with my background, I actually did quite a few different things. So I, like all of the information services librarian, I did some teaching of both drop-in sessions and classes on library skills. One of the things I always did drop-ins for, and that I also did sort of one-on-one, was EndNote and, through the years, other bibliographic software systems too. So I had all the experience with ProCite. It was not that, you know, I was very knowledgeable in that. So I became one of the people that worked on that. As a liaison librarian, I was liaison to departments that seemed more up my alley. That meant agricultural and applied economics. At the time, it was rural sociology, now community and environmental sociology. I was the liaison for the Nelson Institute, so all the environmental studies, landscape architecture, and urban and regional planning. At some point fairly on, I was named coordinator for the liaison part, so I was also the contact for International Ag and for administration and CALS. Then I did, you know, reference desk shifts and answered questions, and I was also a selector in my subject areas. I was on the selection team identifying monographs for purchase in basically the same subject areas as my liaison responsibilities, plus I would say any sort of policy, environmental policy, and also general agriculture, sustainable ag, stuff like that.
Okay.
So reference librarian means reference teaching and liaison, and then this election was kind of in addition because of my background.
Okay. How did you feel about the move, or how did you adjust or transition into you know, being sort of the lone librarian into a library with lots of librarians?
Right. Well, as I said, it was something I had been looking for, so I was just really happy about it. As far as what happened to the LTC collection, the timing, I think, was good for that, in that we had, you know, when we merged the collections, the internet wasn't like that developed, and it was not clear that, you know, what was going to happen to this task of gathering unique materials that otherwise nobody was paying attention to. But by the time I left, it became, you know, increasingly obvious that the sort of thing that had taken a tremendous amount of human resources to gather and make accessible were now available online, because even in developing countries, people were posting these kind of working papers online, and systems were being developed for sort of keeping things going better and tracking, you know, as things vanish, at least from more academic or governmental agencies. So in that sense, it was good timing. You know, I didn't feel bad about, you know, now nobody will ever find this information anymore because the world changed. In terms of working with folks at Steenbach, as I said, I knew most of them, not all of them, but most of them, and that was mostly good. The two downsides were that because I was hired under this sort of priority hiring arrangements, the ones I didn't know, you know, I think it took them a while to see that, yes, even though that was the way I came into the position, I was qualified and I did make a contribution, and it wasn't a problem for long, but I sort of, it might not even been a problem at all. It might have been my perception, but I was concerned about that. And the other funny part of it was that because I knew all of these people and because I had been in the building with them for many years, some of them forgot that I sort of hadn't been in the general library system. So they would assume I had knowledge of things that I really didn't. And but I wasn't too much of a shrinking violet. I just asked. That worked out.
And you may have alluded to this in what you just said, but I think I sent you in the email sort of the highlights, lowlights question.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Maybe we'll start, since you talked a bit about the downsides, maybe we'll start with the lowlights first and work our way back to the highlights. So in your 8 years here, are there things that you would characterize as not as good as it could have been?
Well, in general, I found it fine. I think the challenges were more along the lines of staffing. Yes, I was coming into a place with a lot more librarians, but when I came in, two people had retired and one person was hired. The people who had retired were Lois Komai, who had been in the reference department, and John Cook, who had been the documents librarian, and they no longer was a documents librarian, government documents. So I think this sort of continuing uncertainty as staffing changed and it was never that clear, who we would be able to replace and who we wouldn't, and that certainly got worse near the last couple of years. But in general, it was a really positive experience.
So then let's segue to maybe some specifics about the positives and maybe talk about some of the highlights during your 8 years here.
Well, I think that Steenbach right now is in a transition, and I'm not quite sure where it's going because, there's not a permanent new director or anything like that. During the years I was here, in some ways it was sort of just more incremental than any big projects. And I had tended to sort of work on a project basis. But the real... For me personally, the really great thing was, again, getting to know not only my coworkers, but the departments that I was liaison for, getting back to having that contact on a more regular basis with the faculty and students. Also, when I said that people assumed I knew things I didn't, part of that was they assumed I knew things about the subject matter that Steenbach covers that I didn't. I completely clueless about a lot of, sort of more scientific side things. So I got to learn a lot of new stuff, which was fun. I had great people to work with. And during that time, I think we developed a liaison program, and that's still continuing, and there were some important changes in adding, reference services and, IM and all that kind of thing, and that was always fun, and I worked with several different kinds of committees and the GLS that also allowed me to, understand how it works better and also work with some fantastic people. I would say sounds silly, but I was this sort of tech services geeky part, doing all of the citation manager stuff was a lot of fun. I mean, not only EndNote, but, others as they came along, and that was a great group to work with.
So a couple.
We kept hoping to do some kind of remodeling things that kept sort of falling through. That was frustrating. The dealing with the building parts of Steenbach, I think.
Is there anything specifically that stands out that you would like to have seen done that didn't get done?
No, it was more a matter of, you know, not being that sure what we should and shouldn't do. We did integrate all the service desks during the time I was here. When I first started, we had three different physical service points, and that's been pared down to, I'd say, one and a half. Half because the reference desk is not, you know, staffed all the time.
Mm. Okay. So I think I have three more questions.
Okay.
So I think I'll ask the why retire question last. So I think what I want to ask first is your thoughts of when you left the GLS in 2010 versus your thoughts about the general library system when you started in 2003.
You're asking me what I thought about the general library system at those two points?
Yeah, just because that's when you sort of started at Steenbach and ended.
Okay.
So, it might be sort of looking at it in terms of change and and honestly, perhaps your opinion on whether those what you've seen in terms of change is good or not so good.
Well, I think some things that changed were better than others. How should I put it? Not just over the last few years, but over all of this time, you know, the one thing the general library system has worked to become more efficient. And in some ways, I mean, and that's what, you know, technology is about too now. And sometimes that's really a good thing because you can, if it means that people are collaborating more and all of that kind of thing, that they're working together and not duplicating efforts, and all of that's really important. I think not only I, but people who had longer experience than I did were concerned that there was a little bit of a loss of the specialization, of the sort of understanding of the role of different libraries within the system, having some kind of subject expertise. It's always a problem, you know, to what extent is any particular library a special case and has its own strengths that it brings. And I think that was, for Steenbach, frankly, an ongoing problem during this period because it's the largest science library, but physically it's, you know, near the dorms, and the people actually in the library tend to be undergraduates, but yet there's a feeling that there's a need for expertise in very specific subject areas. So that part of the relationship was always a little bit rocky, I thought. The other thing about GLS generally, I guess, is that on the one hand, there's like a lot of committees and working together, but on the other hand, there was still, as probably in many large systems, often a feeling that people didn't know what was really going on, you know, that there are big changes that people were thinking about, but they don't want to say anything because it might not happen or whatever. And frankly, one of my best things, best things about retiring was not having to go to any more all GLS staff meetings where I heard how we were going to do so much more new exciting stuff with less. Because I saw a lot of years of trying to do more with less, and you can maybe do the same with less. You can do different with less, but more with less is not something I've observed being a long-term strategy. You know, sure, incrementally, yes, you can. But overall, you know, there's a certain level of support needed. The other thing is just the struggle, I think, for libraries and librarians to figure out how they fit into the educational system with the technological changes that have happened. We've always had some problems explaining what we do to people, I think, partly because there's so much of it. I mean, we do so many different things, but I observed as LTC lost funding, a lot of floundering that was, well, we'll do anything they'll give us money for, rather than at times, as opposed to the times when you really try to have a vision and work toward it and sell it and modify it as necessary. And I think I saw a little bit of the danger of, well, if this is what people want, then sure, we can do that. And sometimes we can, and sometimes we might not be the best people to do it. So.
Okay. Now, I'd like you to maybe look at you can still look on this campus,
sure.
Since most of this time was spent
right.
on this campus, but maybe build it out and just look at librarianship in general mm-hmm. over the course of your, what did it end up being from 70, from the late 70s to 2010?
Right, that's 33 plus years here and a couple of years before that and minor.
So roughly 35 years
right.
of librarianship. The change in librarianship,
uh-huh.
and again, sort of looking at it in terms of what you think uh-huh. is good about what's happened and maybe not so good about what's happened. I know that's a big, bad, broad.
Yeah.
I know it's a big, bad,
yeah.
broad question, but.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I could just feed you with something and say,
sure.
It sounds like to me that for the most part, the changes in technology in 35 years have been by far more good than ill. Is that a fair statement for me to say?
I think so, yeah. I would go along with that. I always looked at technology as a tool, and to the extent it makes it possible for you to either do something better or do something that you wished you could and couldn't before, then that's just great, so yes.
And then what about, and you alluded to this in your last answer, but the idea of, particularly for most of this time you've been on a university campus,
right.
is the idea of how do librarians fit
mm-hmm.
into the teaching and the learning that
mm-hmm.
goes on
mm-hmm.
this campus? And has that changed over 35 years?
Well, it's certainly changed in that, in all of those sort of low-tech days, there were still plenty of people who never darkened the doorway of a library, but it was clear that libraries had information that students and faculty needed, and that at least for the students, for the more general, the students would have to learn how to get it, and the faculty either had already learned or they had grad students who they would send, and either way, you know, you had to, it had to be at least some, I think part of it is that students didn't feel embarrassed about not knowing. I mean, some of them probably did, but it was clearly a specialized, separate area that that you would learn about. Now, from the faculty viewpoint, I think they often didn't have a very clear idea of what the librarians were doing. They knew, well, we buy some books, and having books is good, and then we'd help out their students, which kind of is still the way I think a lot of them look at it. And that's is part of what we do. I think the problem at this point is that, you know, librarians were actually in the lead of adopting technology. You know, we had computers before a lot of people did. And so this idea that little librarians are stuck in the past, and that's a perception, not something I've ever found to be a fact. However, as technological changes continue, and young people you know, people grow up in a digital environment their whole life. It's a real double-edged sword, because on the one hand, you know, they clearly think, you know, well, they clearly do know how to navigate that world and find a lot of information. And at the same time, from the standpoint of both them and, I would say, older faculty, have this impression that, well, everything is digital now, and all the library probably needs is, like, money to pay for me to have access to the journals I like or whatever. And from librarian's standpoint on teaching, I think it's been an interesting debate to follow, because there used to be a dichotomy between public service and technical services. You know, the technical services people knew all those weird cataloging rules nobody cared about, and the public services people were the nice ones you'd ask questions of. In the last few years, it seemed to me that there's another really big divide between libraries' place, you know, what do we do with the building, and what it is that we need to contribute to the educational mission beyond just making books and journals available. And those are two pretty different things. And I think on the educational mission, people are tending towards things like, early on it was sort of computer literacy or information, I don't know what, but now it's more, you know, libraries contributing to helping students develop skills to discriminate quality of information and to wade through all of that stuff that's out there to find the things that are most appropriate and to develop, you know, critical skills, which is part of what everybody's teaching. So does that answer the question at all?
Yeah. There's one more question I want to ask before I ask why you retired, and
sure.
That's, I think, will be our final question, and that's that a year from now, or maybe even 6 months from now, there will be a new library director.
Yes.
If you were on a committee to help hire that new library director, what things would you be looking for in a candidate?
Oh, perfection. I mean, this kind of thing, it can be so, the answer seems so cliched, because a lot of the things are what you always put on a job announcement, but they're really true. Communication skills, both with the people in the library system and outside, administration and all of that. Administrative experience and expertise, because it's an administrative job. Someone who is committed to the educational mission of the university, not just the libraries, and open to finding the best ways that libraries can contribute to that. You know, over these past few years, we've kind of had this two-part administration, and one more on the, Ken, as library director, has been more on the campus-wide and sort of maybe fundraising side of things, and Ed has been more on the implementation side of things. I don't know how they're going to build that. That's something that I think they really need to think about. What kind of administrative structure is appropriate for the library system? So I guess I would want somebody who would be open to listening to all sides, who would really not jump in and do anything right away before learning about the campus, assuming it's someone from off campus. But not be afraid to, you know, develop a really a plan that's looking at a bit further, and then just say, okay, this is, you know, we consult with everybody, here's our timetable for trying to reach a decision, and then do it understanding that, you know, everything you do is subject to change. I mean, just, it's important to make a decision and try something, and then if it's not working out, it's important to admit that and figure out what other route you can take to reach your goals. So the most important thing, I think, is setting the long-range purpose and goal for the system, and then work towards, you know, finding the best way, and really trusting and relying on the talents of the people working in this library system, because there's some fantastic people here. Really skilled.
All right. Last question.
But I'm glad I'm not on the committee.
Well, yeah. you and me both.
Yeah.
Last question is why did you decide to retire when you did?
This is not any big mystery, since about half the people in the library retired about the same time, it seemed. I retired in May, and I turned 62 this November. So I was within probably 3 or 4 years of retirement. That's what I considered where I was. And over the last few years, you know, I had been moved to being the head of the Information Services Department on the management team at Steenbach. It was, you know, it was fine. It was a good job. But financially, it was not any great shakes. We had had a pay freeze for, 2 years. We got 1% instead of 3 1 year, and then we had like 2 years of no increases and taking mandatory furlough days. So that was basically a cut in pay with unpaid vacations or whatever you want to consider it. So that was bad, but, you know, times are tough and all that kind of thing. And then when the new governor came in, Governor Walker, and sort of showed up with his plans for the university, frankly, so the plan was, okay, no more furloughs, but you still don't get any more money. So that's really just working more for the same pay. And that was not pleasing, but frankly, it was the main thing that made me decide to retire when I did was fear about the loss of the sick leave conversion benefit for future generations. This probably sounds pretty weird, but the university has a policy that anyone who has worked for, I think it's 10 or 15 years, and has unused sick leave, when they retire, they can take the value of that. The university matches it, so it's twice as much money, and you can use that to buy health insurance. If you're not yet eligible for Medicare, and if you, after that age, to buy supplemental health insurance. So it's a substantive benefit, because I had something like 6 months worth of unused sick leave. So, I mean, that was the reason I retired. I wasn't willing to risk that under circumstances where it was pretty clear that there were going to be continued cuts in pay, or compensation, not pay, that would mean that I would basically, by the time I would be retirement age anyway, I would never make up the lost ground. You know, it just wasn't going to happen. So it was strictly a personal financial decision. It wasn't that retirement was so far out that it was scary or I hadn't thought about it. There were a lot of other, you know, people leaving in the general library system. It didn't influence my decision, but in retrospect, I think I left at the right time. Since then, there's been, what have they now said, another... you know, the compensation cut was basically removing the university's contribution towards retirement. So, you know, and that meant that therefore take-home pay would be less. And frankly, once I add in Social Security, now that I'm eligible, I'm going to come out ahead. So.
All right. Is there anything you want to say? Is there anything you want to say about anything on your mind? Anything you want to say about what you've done in retirement? Anything is sort of to put a
nice, pretty Christmas bow on this?
No,
it's still early days. You know, what I've done since retirement is put some more attention to my my house. For instance, they're putting a new roof on it as we speak. Poor guy's out in the cold working. So. No, it's still early days. I think it's been like maybe about 6 months now since I retired. And I guess the one thing I would say is that it was so much better to retire from Steinbach than it would have been to retire from LTC. Now, that may sound weird because they were very nice people and I'm still in touch with many of them. But having a larger group of colleagues who are really in my own field means that I am in touch with a lot of them on a very regular basis. So it was more of a, you know, I felt I retired with a support group from work that frankly wouldn't have been there if I had retired from that other job.
All right. Anything else you want to say about basically, this is the question I keep asking at the end. Anything on your mind that you'd like to get off in case we won't do another interview. So this is sort of the last chance.
I do appreciate this opportunity, and I've got to say that despite some stressful moments at work, everybody has those. It's been University of Wisconsin's been a great place to work in both places, and primarily I think, like people say about all jobs, primarily because of the people. You know, my colleagues in both Land Tenure Center and Steinbach, and all of the students and faculty and other staff members I worked with was what made it a great place.
Great. Bev, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.